Having MG can make cooking difficult, but over the years, I found some really helpful tools and tips that I'm excited to share. Hi, I'm Alicia. I think cooking should always be fun, creative, and of course, delicious. These black bean burgers are hearty, full of flavor, and MG friendly. You're gonna love them.
Check out Alicia's black bean burger cooking video and other recipes full of tips and tricks for managing common MG symptoms while cooking only at mg-united.com.
Ready? Let's cook.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
This podcast contains adult language and content. Listener discretion is advised. If you have a story to share, send it to letsnotmeetstories@gmail.com. After hearing similar stories, I figured I should share my story because to this day, I'm still baffled by this experience. I was living in Austin, Texas at the time, but I had flown out to Los Angeles for the weekend. My friends put on a yearly music festival at a biker bar around Joshua Tree. It was a relatively small thing compared to Coachella and the like, but most of the attendees were musicians and everybody knew each other. We all usually drank there, pretty heavily. We did this for about 3 days or so, and by the end of it, you tended to need at least a week to recover. Afterwards, I was flying back to Texas, wildly hungover, miserable, and completely drained. I had a flight from LA to Dallas, then a quick hop over to Austin from there. I was seated by the window on the left side, where there were only two seats. Seated in the aisle seat was a middle-aged woman, totally unremarkable, just your average Texan mom. We made polite small talk for a few minutes, but honestly, I just felt like doing nothing but curling up in a ball against the wall and passing out. So shortly after takeoff, I put my headphones in and started watching a movie on my iPod until I fell asleep. Throughout the movie, I thought I noticed her trying to look over my shoulder to watch the movie too, but then I thought I heard her mumble something like, "Oh great, just ignore me." It happened several times, but I convinced myself I was just misunderstanding her. Eventually, I noticed her furiously scribbling in the margins of a beat-up, leather-bound book. I kept peeking over at it, seeing that the entire book was filled up with unintelligible chicken scratch in pretty much every bit of every available space in the margins. I also noticed it was an Alcoholics Anonymous book. Whatever, I thought. Just somebody with their own issues. I eventually fell asleep, and then I woke up when we landed in Dallas. People started getting off the plane, and the woman made zero effort to start packing up her things to get ready to go. She just kept sitting there, scribbling in her book. As I said, I was wildly hungover and kind of cranky, so I had no patience for anything that was prolonging the time I had to spend on the airplane. It was time for our row to deboard, and it was her turn to move into the aisle, but again, she wasn't moving at all. so the rows behind us started to leave. I finally said, "Hey, I've got a connecting flight to catch. I have got to get moving." I gestured towards the aisle and stood up. She then laughed and shook her head, looked up at me and replied, "Oh, no, no, you aren't going anywhere." My mind was not at its sharpest that day, but I was still so confused. I responded, "I assure you I am going somewhere. I'm getting off this plane right now." She shook her head again and said, "But you promised you would never leave me." Now, other people who were leaving the plane were looking at this exchange, also baffled. I made eye contact with a few people giving a "can you believe this" look before finally shoving my way out of the row. As I edged my way past this woman, I said, "Ha, no, I certainly never said that. I'm leaving now." She sighed and said, "Well, I guess I'm going with you then." And then she stood up behind me, leaving her purse, book, and all of her belongings on the plane and followed me out. She followed me all the way through the tunnel and through the terminal, then up the escalator, right on my heels. She was grinning like a madwoman the entire time. I was walking fast, but she was still right on my heels. I didn't say anything at first, but my mind kept saying, "Why is this happening now?" Of all the days, I did not want to deal with whatever the hell this woman was dealing with, not with the way I was feeling. I eventually got to the waiting area for the monorail to get to the next terminal, where my connecting flight was, and she got up right next to me, still grinning. At this point, I said, "All right, seriously, why are you following me like this?" She replied, "Because I love you, and you promised that you would never be apart from me." Nervously, I laughed and looked around at the strangers who were also waiting for the train as I loudly announced, "No, I did not promise that. I have no idea who you are." The train arrived and I got on. She followed, and by this point, she was trying to hold my hand. I was moving around the monorail car, texting a girl I was seeing at the time about what was going on and how I was actually kind of terrified of this woman. My phone was at 1%, though, and it died before I could get a response. I was actually getting severely creeped out by the woman. Her eyes were completely vacant. There was just nothing but emptiness in her stare. She didn't even blink. Coupled with her unyielding grin, I was becoming sure it was just a matter of time before she snapped and proceeded to stab me or shove me down an escalator or something. She was still grabbing at my hand and following me as I shuffled around the tiny train car, announcing to the other strangers, "I don't have any idea who this woman is, seriously. Can anyone get a hold of security or something?" But everyone just responded with silence. Nobody else wanted to deal with her either. So I then felt like I was the crazy one, making random one-sided statements to a train full of strangers. Then we finally got to the other terminal. I nearly ran out of there to my gate, with her right behind me, still saying things like, "You won't get away from me this time." I got to the gate and spent a moment scanning the crowd. I saw a woman in what looked like a police uniform waiting, so I approached her and said, "Excuse me, are you security or police?" But they just shook their head at me. Everyone in the crowd just did their best to ignore me. You would be amazed at how hard it is to find security or police in a damn airport when you really need them. So then I went up to the desk and shamelessly interrupted the agents standing there. Doing my best to maintain composure, I put on a half smile and explained, "So this woman standing right next to me here, I have no idea who she is, and she's been following me for quite some time." Both of the agents laughed, and the male agent made a comment like, "This must have been a long vacation for you guys, huh? Seriously, what can I help you with?" The crazy lady laughed with them, rolling her eyes at my quote-unquote absurd assertion that I didn't know her. I chuckled, shook my head, and continued, "No, I mean it. I have no idea who this woman is." The agents finally saw the desperation in my eyes and picked up on the seriousness of my tone, so their smiles faded. "Can we see your boarding passes?" they asked. I handed them mine. She produced hers from her pocket, as I continued explaining. She was on my previous flight. She even left her purse on that plane, all the way in the other terminal. The agents then spoke amongst themselves, off to the side for a moment, while I just completely ignored the woman. I was swatting her hand away as she tried to hold mine for the 100th time. Then the agents made a few quick hushed calls, came back over, and said, "Come with me." Then they immediately whisked me through the door, slamming it on my pursuer, and I was loaded onto the plane about 10 minutes before any other passengers. A stream of staff members filtered in after me, each one offering a new apology. Eventually, the rest of the passengers got on, and they all shot me glances as they passed my row. Some were sympathetic, some were out of sheer confusion. The man who sat behind me asked, "Hey man, what was that?" I gave him the brief version and he said, "She had a complete and total meltdown the second you got on the plane. She was screaming, tearing her hair out, pounding her feet. They took her away in handcuffs." "You really didn't know her?" they asked. "No, I didn't," I replied. To this day, I still wonder all the time what the hell was going on with that woman. I've barely told this story to any of my friends because it's just so unbelievable. I never received any other information about the incident. I never learned who she was or why she thought I promised her anything, let alone eternal companionship and love. To this day, when I think about the look in her eyes when she said, "You promised you'd never leave me," my skin crawls. This was around 2004 when I was 20, living in a small two-level apartment on the main floor of the building. Out front, there were three stairs, then a deck, and then three more stairs to the front door, and another little narrow deck that ran the length of the front of the apartment, which, besides the door, was all windows. The main floor was a tiny kitchen and a living room with a door that opened to a hallway that led to the laundry and parking access, all of which were totally visible from the windows. It was fall in Western Canada during daylight savings, so while it was pitch black early on, it was surprisingly warm for the season. I had all of my windows open, and I didn't close the blinds because I wanted to get the breeze in. I was talking on the phone to my sister, and I had my back to the windows. When I turned around, I thought I saw something weird at the window. It was bright inside, so I turned the main light off, and I saw a man pressed against the window staring at me. I screamed and told my sister a man was on the deck looking at me. He seemed to take off into the darkness, so I turned off all of the lights inside and put the outside ones on. I was blubbering to my sister. "Holy shit, a peeping Tom, I can't believe it." And then he just walked right back up the deck. I screamed again, "He's back. I have to call 911. So I hung up and called, all while he was right there at the window. It was still open. The windows were floor to ceiling with a crank on the bottom that I had opened to the max that would accommodate a determined person crawling in. He could hear me and the 911 call, but he still didn't move. I had crouched down in the dark room, and the main light was off so he couldn't see me, but I still had the lights on beside the door in the hallway and on the stairs to the bedroom. I didn't want to move and let him know where I was. I should have run into the hall and banged on the neighbor's door, but I was in shock, and the cops were on their way. They were coming from a station 10 blocks away. I figured they'd be there soon. I was still on the phone with the 911 operator, who suddenly broke my train of thought by saying, "We can't find your address." I was confused by this, because I was directly behind the rec center at a popular intersection. My apartment building was the only apartment building back there, so it was pretty unmistakable. So I didn't understand why they were unable to find me. The man at the window then started banging on the glass. I was whispering, but I assumed he heard me giving repeated, panicked directions, and neither of us were hearing any sirens. It felt like this was going on forever until he finally ran off. I couldn't see far since it was so dark, but there were plenty of places for him to crouch and hide, so I wasn't sure where he went or how far away he had gone. I peeked out and saw a police car, so I told the operator they had finally made it there. But then the car started to drive away, so the operator told me to go outside and flag them down. I'm not sure what surprised me more, the fact that I was told to do this or the fact that I actually did, but I did end up going outside and flagging them down because I was scared. When I did, the officer casually rolled their window down and asked, "Ma'am, do you need help?" I said, "Yes, I called 911. The officer replied, "We're just driving by. What's the problem?" I told them what happened, and they never found the man who terrified me. This whole situation makes me feel so unsafe that I moved, but it was truly the cops not being able to find the only apartments behind a notable building in a very recognizable area that completely shook me. The frightening end note is that when I moved out, they tried to charge me because they said that the downstairs screens had been shredded by the cats. The screens were pristine the day that the creeper showed up, and that was the last time I opened the downstairs windows or the blinds or used the front door. The property manager laughed at me and mocked me when I said someone cut them. But then I showed her the police report. She lived there as well, so it was suddenly not so funny. Finding a gift that actually feels thoughtful gets harder every year, especially around the holidays. Everyone already has enough stuff, and the impulse gifts never really land. And this year, I might do the same as last year, where I gave a friend Nutrafol. I mean, it turned out to be one of the most useful gifts that I had given in a long time. My friend said that they had been dealing with some hair thinning and shedding for a while, and it always made her feel self-conscious before family gatherings and events like that. She started taking Nutrafol, and within a few months, she told me that she already noticed her hair looking fuller and feeling stronger. And now, a year later, heading into the holidays, I can tell she's so much happier. She also liked how simple the routine was, so she uses the women's formula and just takes 4 pills daily with meals. And because Nutrafol has a proactive approach to supporting hair health and targets root causes, she said it felt like she was finally doing something meaningful for herself instead of just covering things up, and I know how that is. And honestly, gifting someone something that they'll actually use instead of another mug or a blanket, it feels a lot more personal. Helping someone feel a little better and a little more confident might be the most thoughtful gift that you can give. And you can also feel good knowing that Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF Content Certified, the gold standard in third-party certification. Give the gift of confidence this holiday season with Nutrafol. Whether you're treating yourself or someone on your list, visibly healthier, thicker hair is the gift that keeps on giving. Right now, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription, plus free shipping. When you go to Nutrafol.com and use the promo code CREEPY, that's Nutrafol.com, promo code CREEPY for $10 off.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
I was recently reminded of this story and I figured I would share it. This all happened in August of 2017. I was 23 years old and had just moved back into my mom's place, which happened to be about 30 minutes from my nearest friend's place. My car broke down, so I was Ubering everywhere. I went down to my friend's place to help them move, but first I went to Target to grab some champagne and orange juice because apparently I thought an imminent hangover was a great idea. Fast forward to later that night, and of course, I was doubled over, throwing up with a migraine. I could barely lift my head, and I had to work the morning shift the next day. My friends didn't know where to find over-the-counter meds for headaches, but of course, the stoner of the house offered me an edible. Now, I may have killed the bottle of champagne, but I hadn't touched marijuana in years, so I ate half of that edible and waited about 45 minutes until I felt better, and then I called my Uber. I was getting picked up in an apartment complex and, of course, had to walk to the front to find the driver because I've never met an Uber driver who can locate an apartment unit with accuracy. Once I found my Uber, I got in the back seat, and the driver turned around and introduced himself. This guy had a really thick southern drawl. I told him I had a migraine and I just wanted to go home. He then pulled out a bottle of water that was already opened, handed me some random pills, and told me that they would make me feel much better. I politely took them from him and proceeded to put the pills onto the seat, and I shoved the water bottle into the seat pocket in front of me. We began our roughly 30-minute journey to my mom's apartment. Now, this guy started the drive by telling me prison stories, and then somehow segued into how the world was going to end by December 20th of 2017. Every few sentences, he would mention his bunker. He constantly asked me if I wanted to head there instead of home. My high ass kept telling him that I'd love to, but I said I had to work in the morning and I couldn't. Then he was cycling through conspiracies from how the earth was flat to giants in Afghanistan. He said, I probably shouldn't be telling you this stuff. At some point, he was telling me that he had an arsenal of guns. He asked me if I had guns, and my liberal millennial ass told him I had lots of guns. He also told me that he was growing opium at his bunker, and he asked again if I wanted to go there with him. I started to panic, texting everybody that I knew. I was sharing my location at this point as well. I also started recording. I managed to get about 7 minutes of footage of this 30-minute drive. As we got closer to the exit that he needed to take to drop me off, he was still in the far left lane of this 4-lane highway. I kept telling him to move over since the exit was coming up, but this creepy guy just kept going on about how well stocked his bunker was, and he missed the exit. I finally lost it. I was screaming at him, telling him to take me home. I said that my mom was waiting for me and I had work tomorrow. He finally got off at the next exit after I started kicking his seat and threatening to jump out of the moving car. I ran out of his car so fast when he hit the red light outside of my apartment complex. As soon as I got inside, I tried telling my mom what happened, but she brushed it off and was more disappointed that I told her I had taken an edible. The next morning, I explained what happened more coherently and showed her the videos, and we reported him to Uber. I still take Uber on occasion, but I will never use one while alone and inebriated ever again. And this is the reason I don't consume THC. The universe knows when I'm high, and things like this always happen to me. So creepy Uber driver wanting to take me to his bunker, let's not meet again. Let me start by saying, I'm a very nice person, and I'll befriend most people if they're nice and our personalities go well together. Due to these criteria, here is where he comes in. During the summer at my first job, I met this guy. I was in no way attracted to him, but I thought he was nice. I decided to be his friend while making it very clear that I was only interested in being friends with him. I eventually stopped hanging out with him and started ignoring him, but sometimes I fear he'll show up at my job again. Now, I noticed very early on that he was really clingy and pushy to hang out with. He almost always wanted to stop by immediately after asking if we could hang out. I found his urgency strange, but I put it aside and figured maybe he didn't really have any friends. I also knew that he held strong grudges, so I would generally be pretty quick to comply. Once, this girl who also worked with us didn't say hi back to him and he said, "Fuck that bitch, she can die." He wishes bad on anyone who's rude to him. Now, both of these were absolute red flags. Now, these were obviously red flags telling me to run, but I continued to be nice. After summer had ended, I was going back to college. Even though I was going to school about an hour away, he still wanted to hang out. He was willing to drive all the way there just to see me. I found it kind of annoying that he just wouldn't make more friends, but I ultimately brushed it off. Once he even texted me saying that he would shoot himself, so I called him and tried to comfort him, and I told him that things would get better. During college, I had Tinder, and I finally found someone who I liked. We started dating, and that is when he got even more clingy and weird. He was always depressed, talking about how nobody wanted him. He was saying that he was 21, and that was a good age to die. At that point, I was severely annoyed with him because he was trying to guilt me into dating him. Whenever we hung out, he would ask, "Why not me? What's wrong with me?" And when I'd choose to hang out with my boyfriend, he would text me and say things like, "You'll never hear from me again. I'll be dead." I ignored his messages because there was just something not right. The following summer came around, and I was still working at the same company, but at a different location. I was still sort of friends with him, though I avoided hanging out with him while I was at college. He worked at the same company, but he was still at my previous location. He wanted to transfer to mine since he said he hated the people at his, and because I'd be working at the new location. At some point during the summer, I started to ignore him because he was still trying to guilt me into dating him. My boyfriend also didn't like him because he thought he was crazy and didn't want him near me. And this is when things got really weird. After the fallout, and weeks of not texting, he came into my line at the store to buy one single item, not saying a word. Ever since then, while working, now and again, I'll look around and see him walking around near the cashier line. After my sightings of him started, college started again, and I went to live on campus. I would get text messages from him now and again saying hi, or hey, how are you doing? Then he started messaging me on Snapchat. He would say, "Let's talk about this like adults." I finally replied because at this point, he just wouldn't leave me alone. I told him I had no interest in being his friend because he was toxic and needed to make new friends. By the time he gave up, winter break had come, and I had to decide if I wanted to work during the break or not. As I mulled this over, I thought about how often he talked about getting his gun license. I feared that he would show up, possibly with a gun, while I was at work. On the other hand, I didn't feel safe at home either since he only lives about 5 minutes away from me. He chose to move there. He moved out of his parents' house just 10 minutes away from me in my hometown. I have a feeling he'll be lurking through the store when I start working there. When I'm home, all I think about is he sitting in his car in the street next to my house? So maybe let's not meet again. I've learned to accept that I'm one of those people who suddenly realizes, usually way too late, that the holidays are here and I haven't bought a single gift. And the person I always struggle with the most is my mom. She never asks for anything. And when she does want something, she buys it before anyone can get to it. So one year I bought her an Aura frame. And honestly, it felt like the first time I found a gift that she actually used every day. I even went through old family photos and uploaded them ahead of time. So when she opened it, all of the memories that she hadn't seen in years were already playing. And the best part is that I can just keep adding new photos from my phone throughout the year, even when we're not in the same city. Uploading everything is incredibly easy. Just the Aura app and Wi-Fi, that's all you need. And being able to personalize the gift before it even ships made it so much more thoughtful than other last-minute store runs. And since every frame comes with a premium gift box, it even looks like I planned ahead, which we both know I didn't. You can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com and getting $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code MEET, M-E-E-T, at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code MEET. This deal is exclusive to listeners and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
This happened to me at work, I'd say about 2 years ago. So at that time, I was 19 years old. I'm a female. I was working at my local coffee shop where I actually still work. I usually work the closing shift, which ends at 10 p.m. During times with slow business, we have to close the shop alone, which I did as usual on this particular evening. About 15 minutes before I closed up shop, an unusual client entered the cafe. I mostly say unusual because most of my clients are regulars and I hadn't seen this person before. If I had to guess, this guy seemed to be in his mid to late 30s. He came in and asked for an empty cup, which I gave him. This didn't seem like a strange request at first, but then he walked back outside, walked out onto the corner, and popped open a bottle of champagne. He then proceeded to chug about half of it and poured the remaining half into an empty cup that I had just given to him. I thought it was weird, but I didn't want to confront him because, as a reminder, I was working alone. And he had just chugged a considerable amount of alcohol. He then started dancing around on the corner. I was ready to finish my shift and go get wasted with my friends, though. Then, about 5 minutes before closing, I walked around the coffee shop and let the lingering clients know that I was getting ready to close up. And then the champagne guy came back in, came up to the counter, slid a chocolate bar over to me and said, "Thank you so much." I replied and smiled, "No problem," and then he left the shop again. At first, the chocolate bar seemed normal, but after further investigation, I noticed that it was cut in half inside the packaging, It seemed to have been resealed with something like maybe a hair straightener, which I did find concerning. One thing I didn't mention is that my friends were sitting at a table inside the coffee shop, and I didn't talk to them at all while this guy was around, since I was trying to finish my tasks as fast as I could. So from his point of view, they didn't seem like they were my friends. Anyway, closing time came around, so I locked both the front and back doors. When locked, it is possible to use the back door to exit the restaurant, but it doesn't open from the outside. While I was counting the register and messing around with my friends, one of them went into the bathroom. She used the handicap bathroom, which shares the same wall as the men's bathroom. When she came back out, she asked, "Who knocked on the wall while I was in the bathroom?" My two other friends and I were all confused because none of us had done that, so we were concerned. So then we went to do a quick check of the men's bathroom, but before we could check it, I heard the back door open and close. All of that made me connect the dots, and my gut was telling me that it was the champagne guy in the bathroom. He had somehow come back in, and he was hiding out in the men's restroom. What if I were alone that night? What if I ended up eating this warped chocolate that he gave me that was resealed? Would he have attacked me, assaulted me, or worse? I have so many unanswered questions, but I'll never know. The situation still keeps me up at night, and I hope we never meet again. I was 15 years old. Back in those days, you'd usually catch me and my friends at the big AMC movie theater. It was a huge theater. It was a popular hangout for kids that age on the weekend. I remember going to the movies one night with friends, and a group of guys approached us. We started chatting and flirting, as you did at that age. They said that they went to one of the local high schools. One of the guys I was talking to eventually asked for my phone number, and I gave it to him. I was naive and thought that this was harmless. These were the days before cell phones were ubiquitous, so I gave him my home phone number. He called me maybe a day or two after that, and we talked for a bit. We had a few more phone conversations here and there before he asked me on a date. As we made plans to meet, he told me that he needed to tell me something. He admitted that he wasn't actually 16 or whatever age he said he was. He wasn't even in high school. He told me he was 22. I fell silent when he told me this, trying to think of my response. But there was more. Not only was he 22, but he had been in prison and was recently released. And why was he there? He was charged with being an accessory to murder for being in the car when his friend shot someone while driving by. I still remember the feeling of being frozen in fear. I calmly said that I didn't want to talk to him anymore and asked him to please never call me again. After I hung up, the phone immediately started ringing. I picked it up, but before I could even say hello, this man had called back and was already screaming at the top of his lungs into the phone. I can't remember exactly what he was saying, but it was along the lines of, "Don't you ever hang up on me." He was calling me every name in the book. I hung up again, this time leaving the phone off the receiver. I remember being so scared to tell my parents because I didn't want them to be disappointed in me. They were always so proud of me for making good decisions. It was my fault, after all, giving some guy I just met my phone number. So I didn't say anything at first. The calls kept coming. But to keep my parents in the dark, I usually made sure I was the one answering the phone when it rang. He told me he put my home phone number into a reverse phone directory and found my address. After that, when he would call, he would say things like, "I like your sister's new green car," to make sure that I knew he was watching the house. Around this time, I developed a fear of being home alone. I couldn't be alone even for a minute, so if my parents and sister were ever gone, I'd call a neighbor or a friend and ask them to come over and spend some time with me. One night, my parents were in bed, but my sister and I were up late watching TV. We saw a car pull into our driveway and sit there with its lights on. I couldn't see who it was, but I knew. After that, everything stopped. I remember thinking how crazy it was that he had done all of that, only to disappear. Then, a year, maybe 2 years later, I was sitting home watching the finale of American Idol when the phone rang. The caller ID said that the call was coming from a correctional facility. Confused, I answered it. It was a collect call from you know who. I couldn't believe it. I obviously did not accept the call and hung up. I never heard from him again after that. I did tell my parents about it years later, and they said, "No wonder you were so scared to be alone." I should have told him at the time, but honestly, it could have escalated even further. The story mirrors a similar experience I had a year ago. I really do wonder if there's something about me that just attracts these types of people. One lapse in judgment can easily lead to situations like these. So to all the creepy men who I've encountered in my life, let's not meet again. This happened to a couple of my buddies and I while we were flying JetBlue back from Charleston to New York. About 30 minutes into the flight, I got a text from one of them. He was explaining his situation in the group chat. He told us he was sitting in the middle seat with an elderly man in the aisle seat. He said he suddenly heard a sultry female voice moaning loud enough for the others to hear. Turns out the guy next to him was watching a video on his phone, but his headphones weren't fully plugged in. My friend then nudged him and told him that the others could hear his audio. So the old man pushed the jack back in, finally making the audio private. You'd think the problem would be solved after that, right? Well, not exactly. A moment later, my buddy caught a glimpse of the screen and realized that the guy wasn't watching HBO. He was watching full-on hardcore porn. At first, my friend thought that it might just be a raunchy sex scene from a movie or a show. But no, everyone's parts were crystal clear and it was graphic. Naturally, our group chat lit up with solutions about how to handle the situation. "Just start watching with him until he gets weirded out," one of us said. "Take one of his earbuds and put it in your ear," another friend chimed in. We were all joking, of course. But then my friend texted us again as the situation had escalated. The man had moved on from watching, and he began grabbing himself over his pants and groaning. At this point, I had to see for myself, so I got up and pretended that I was headed to the bathroom. Sure enough, there he was. He had his phone in full screen landscape mode with porn blaring in his lap. I even witnessed him groaning like a walrus as he grabbed himself. Once I was over the shock, I noticed the seats behind him and there were children there. This man had his screen tilted in a way that allowed the kids to see everything. To make it worse, a flight attendant brushed by. She paused just long enough to glance at his phone, but she rolled her eyes and just kept walking. This really pissed me off. They'll wake you up mid-nap to ask you to fold up your tray table, but they won't say a word to someone who's essentially taking a solo trip to the Mile High Club. That was it for me, so I walked over, leaned down, and I told him to take his headphone out. I then said, "You're on a public plane. There are children right behind you." His face flushed red as he fumbled with his phone and stammered out an apology, shutting it off. I shook my head and said, "Fucking disgusting, dude." Then I went back to my seat. On the way, a few women thanked me for speaking up. They were in nearby seats and had been unwillingly subjected to this little matinee. Once I returned to my seat, my friend sent me a final update. He said that the man ditched the porn for solitaire. The irony of staying committed to playing alone wasn't lost on anyone. It was the same lonely energy, but in a different font. When I'm hydrated, everything just works better. My energy, my mood, my focus, all of it feels noticeably different. That's why I've been using Drip Drop. I used to think that hydration was just about drinking more water, but once I started paying attention to electrolytes, the difference was immediate. I probably talked about it before, but there was this time when I worked out way too long, lifted way too hard, and then went to the sauna and stayed for way too long. And all I was doing was chugging water, and I did not feel good after that day. I swear, that was the day when I decided I needed to get something like Drip Drop because it's doctor-developed and proven fast hydration that helps your body and mind work better. It uses a precise ratio of electrolytes and glucose for rapid absorption, delivering 3 times the electrolytes and half the sugar of leading sports drinks. You feel the results fast, more focus, more energy, improved mood, even clearer thinking. The flavors are great too. They have 16 original options and 8 zero sugar varieties. I really like them. It fits my routine so easily. Morning, post-workout, or just a midday slump where everything just needs a boost. I also like knowing that I won't run out thanks to their flexible subscription options. No scrambling, no I thought I had one more packet moments. Just consistent, proven hydration ready when you need it. Right now, Drip Drop is offering podcast listeners 20% off your first order. Go to dripdrop.com and use promo code MEAT. That's dripdrop.com, promo code MEAT for 20% off. Stock up now at dripdrop.com and use promo code MEAT.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
I was telling a friend my story of once having a stalker, and she referred me to this podcast. This happened years ago, but it still affects me to this day. I apologize in advance for the length, but I feel like I have to tell the whole story. The summer after I graduated high school, I was still living at home. I was up late packing for a camping trip with my friends. It was unbelievably hot, and I had a window open as I sat and folded clothes. It was around 2 a.m, and the next thing I knew, there was a hand coming through the gap in the screen of my window. I screamed, and the hand flew back out. I was stunned, but there was a part of me that wondered if it was my younger brother just pranking me. So I got up and I looked out the window, and I saw the figure of a man staring back at me. I ran to my brother's room. He was in there playing video games. We called the police, who came and searched the area but found nothing. They just warned me and my parents to lock the windows and doors, and then they left. We were all still shaken up, and my mom had a feeling that he would come back. She went outside and waited on our back porch, and it turned out her mother's intuition was absolutely right. After just 20 minutes or so, she saw the man dressed in black slink into our backyard along the tree line. There wasn't a fence on the side that he entered from, unfortunately. He hid behind a tree for a few seconds before running to another tree to hide behind it. And then he slowly worked his way towards my window. My mother yelled something to him, and he took off running. The police came back after my mother saw him, but again, they didn't find anything. I never opened my window again, not even the curtains, but my parents installed some motion-detecting lights outside, and that seemed to be the end of that. About 6 months later, my friend and I got an apartment downtown together. We were really excited, as this was our first place on our own. The apartment wasn't exactly high-end, but it was so fun to live in the city. The downside was that it was street parking only, and after living there for only a few weeks, my car was broken into. Nothing was taken, but a single rose was left in the passenger seat. It was very creepy, but I vowed to be vigilant and safe. I always tried to park close to the entrance, near the lights, but often it was difficult to get to those spots, and I would have to park farther away, on dark streets. Things quickly began escalating at this point. My car was getting broken into at least once a week. Most of the time, a flower was left inside, which I always threw on the ground, but once a pair of men's underwear was left. Possibly the most creepy was the bag of Tootsie Rolls. They were my favorite candy. It made me wonder if the person knew me personally, and I started to become suspicious of everyone. Now, there was a laundry room in the basement of the apartment building, and one day I went down to get a load that I had finished drying. As I started folding my clothes, I realized all my undergarments, bras and panties, were gone. Another week, I had a male friend over from school, and his tires were slashed during his visit. By the time the first letter arrived, I had already started making plans to move elsewhere. The letter described a love for me that has been going on for years, and the man who wrote this noted things that proved he had been watching me closely. I was able to arrange for another friend to take over my lease, and I moved in with another friend on the other side of the city. It was a secure building and had an underground parking garage that was only accessible to tenants. I felt much more secure, and the extra money spent was well worth the peace of mind. Things were quiet for a few months, and then my roommate got a boyfriend. Most of us were wary of Ashley's new boyfriend from the beginning. For one, they met on MySpace after he reached out to her. Another reason was that the new boyfriend, Matt, was extremely good-looking. And while Ashley was a wonderful person, she just wasn't the type you would typically expect him to date. Ashley, however, was thrilled. She had never had a boyfriend, and she really felt like he was her Prince Charming. I thought that he was weird and creepy from the very beginning. Matt was on the quiet side and always seemed to be sporting an uncomfortable, leering smile. It was difficult to carry on any sort of conversation with him because he would always make it weird with some random facts that were completely unrelated to what we were talking about. Now, I deleted my MySpace when the initial stalking began, but I created a dummy account to learn more about Matt. It didn't look like he really knew any of his friends in real life. His profile only had pictures of himself, and the rest of the information was vague. My friends and I gently tried to discourage Ashley from seeing Matt. He technically hadn't done anything wrong, but he was just so strange. Whenever we tried to talk about this with her, she would immediately get defensive and shut the conversation down. Meanwhile, Matt started to spend more time at the apartment, and I found myself finding any excuse to avoid coming home. One day I came home from work and I found Matt on the couch alone, drinking a beer. Ashley had been called into work, and she told him that he could just hang out. I was upset because I didn't want to spend time with him, so I grabbed a beer and a snack and headed off to my room and shut the door. After about 30 minutes or so, he knocked on my door and suggested that we watch some TV and get to know each other better, since we both loved Ashley. I did not want to, but I decided that maybe I should just give it a try. So we went out to the living room, and he put on a movie. I tried to focus on the movie because I really didn't want to talk. At one point, I glanced over at him, and he was staring at me with a smile on his face. I snapped at him, "What?" He just continued smiling until he finally said, "I just can't believe it." "Believe what?" I asked. He said nothing and just went back to watching the movie, still smiling. I had no idea what he was talking about, but the interaction left every hair on my body standing on end, so I excused myself, went back to my room, and locked the door. Another month or so went by, and I had managed to avoid being home for much of anything beyond sleep and showering, because Matt practically lived there, and he even brought a bunch of his things into Ashley's room. I really didn't want to move again, but I was beginning to look for other options. On their 6-month anniversary, I saw a huge bouquet on the table, as well as an already opened card propped up next to it. I rolled my eyes and was about to leave when I decided to see what the weirdo wrote to her. When I opened the card, I thought my heart was going to beat out of my chest. Even though I hadn't read the words that he wrote, I was shaking. The handwriting was exactly the same as the handwriting on the letters that the stalker had sent me. I had kept them as evidence and dug them out of my desk for comparison. The handwriting was so unique, it was identical. Matt was the stalker. I called the police first. As they were on their way, I called Ashley and I asked her to come over. She was at work but said that she would be there when she could. I was scared to tell her because I knew she would be shattered. The police took a statement from me, and then they went to Ashley's work to get more information from her, and they ended up breaking the news to her. Ashley called Matt and left him a furious message, even though the cops told her not to say anything, and he completely disappeared after that. There was no Matt or anyone matching his resemblance at the place that he said he worked either. Ashley had never been to his apartment because he said he had been staying with friends for a while to save money for a trip to Europe. His family lived out of state, and she had never met a friend of his because he said that they had a falling out because he was choosing to spend so much time with Ashley. It was all lies, and in the end, she was dating a stranger. We don't even know if Matt was his real name. The cherry on the top of this whole thing was that we went through Matt's things, and he had left everything when he disappeared. So we decided to go through all of it. There was a duffel bag that was full of gym clothes, but in one of the compartments, there were about 10 pictures of me. All were taken from far away, with the exception of one from when I was sleeping. The sheets were current, so I knew that the picture had to have been taken at the current apartment before I started locking my bedroom door. A few pictures dated back to before the incident at my parents' house, which makes me think that that initial incident with the hand reaching through my screen was him as well. There were also 2 pairs of my missing underwear in that bag. I don't want to think of what he did with the rest. There was also a Starbucks lid with my red lipstick marks, a necklace I hadn't even noticed missing, and a few other random 6 souvenirs. The police never tracked him down, but I decided to accept an opportunity overseas that I had been considering and got the hell out of there. Unfortunately, Ashley and I quickly drifted apart after that. She had a really hard time accepting that her first love was a complete psycho, and I think I had some underlying, possibly misplaced anger about how we believed all of his lies and let him into our lives. I don't know what his endgame was. Would he have tried to hurt me? Or was he simply content with being in my world? I'll never know. Being stalked changes you, Even when I lived across the world, I looked over my shoulder everywhere I went, and I still don't have social media accounts attached to my real name. I'm married with children, and I know that he has moved on to torment some other poor woman. But every time I visit my hometown, I am tense and I keep a low profile. Part of me will always worry that Matt will resurface again. Stick around after the music if you're a patron for your extended version of this week's episode. If you want to get access, go to patreon.com/letsnotmeetpodcast to support the show. You'll get access to ad-free versions of all of the episodes at a higher bitrate, plus bonus content and those extensions every week with stories you won't hear anywhere else. If you want to hear your story on the show, send it to letsnotmeetstories@gmail.com. Be sure to check out the new episodes of my other podcasts like Odd Trails and the Old Time Radiocast at crypticcountypodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts, and follow me on Twitch at twitch.tv/crypticcounty. This week you have heard Stalked Through the Airport by a Mad Woman by RJ Zed, The Man at My Window Listening and Staring by Bitch Shortage, Conspiracy Theory Ex-Con Uber Driver by Don't You Weep, The Weird Guy That I Met at Work by Aspiring Cat Lady 5, That Time a Customer Hid in the Toilet Waiting for My Shift to End by Hello Kitty Minions, Forgotten Experience Nearly 17 Years Ago by A.T. Rue 05, My Friends and I Witnessed an Attempted Plane Jacking by Pleasant Avocado 913, that's a clever title there, and finally, My Stalker Became My Roommate's Boyfriend by Gemma Darling. All of the stories you've heard this week were narrated and produced with the permission of their respective authors. Let's Not Meet, a True Horror Podcast, is not associated with Reddit or any other message boards online. We'll see you all next week for a brand new episode of Let's Not Meet. Everybody, stay safe. Found yourself in a situation where you just know.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient unlocked. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs. In all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.